The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to Simply Serie A, the brand new Italian football podcast presented by me, Harry Simeou. Join us weekly to review the latest fixtures, dissect the biggest stories and keep you updated with everything you need to know about one of Europe's finest competitions. Throughout the season, I'll be joined by some of Italian football's most respected journalists and contributors from the peninsula itself. We're finally up and running. Welcome to Simply Serie A with me, Harry Simeou. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for supporting this project. It's a project that's been in the making for quite some time. There's been a few hiccups along the way. Plenty of planning has had to go on in the background. Lots of correspondence, lots of emails flying back and forth. But we're finally here. We're finally ready. We're finally ready to go and talk Italian football. And hopefully you guys will enjoy it. Hopefully you'll love the show. We've got some great contributors lined up throughout the season, for the rest of the season, I should say, three of which have agreed to contribute to this opening episode. Now, on this episode, I had the pleasure of talking to the lovely Chloe Beresford, the brilliant Adam Digby, and the fantastic Matthew St. Angelo from all the way in the United States. So those three join me on this episode. We had a little bit of a Q&A session with each one of them. We wanted to know how they got into Serie A, their stories, and their favourite moments, because you know, it is a wonderful competition steeped in history, and these three are three of the most respected Italian football journalists. So I'm absolutely honoured to have had them all on this opening episode. So stay tuned, and I think coming up first is Chloe Beresford. Hi, Chloe. Welcome to Simply Serie A. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
It's our pleasure. It's our pleasure, of course. Chloe, just wanted to get your sort of a little bit of an introduction about yourself. You know, how did you get into Serie A? How did this league get its grip upon you as it did to me? What was your first experience of it and how did you get hooked?
It's quite a long story, a funny story, really. When I was probably about 12, I started going to watch Stockport County with my dad, which is my local team. And I got absolutely gripped, fell in love head over heels with football. Just, you know, every waking minute was thinking about football and the next game and everything like that. So obviously, being in the sort of English lower leagues, the games were always on a Saturday. So then on a Sunday, we got into watching Football Italia on Channel 4, as so many others did in the 1990s. And my dad always knew that we had a connection to Italy, in that my great-grandfather, so his grandfather, played for Manchester City in the 1930s.
Oh, wow.
They won the FA Cup in 1934, and then they went on a post-season tour to Italy and France. And it was at the time in the 90s, my dad kind of knew that his grandfather played against Fiorentina, but he didn't really know any details. So when we were watching Football Italia, obviously I would always look out for Fiorentina, and that's when Battistuta was scoring. And, you know, to just, because we watched lower league English football, watching those players on a Sunday afternoon was brilliant, because we didn't see that kind of quality, obviously, but we did enjoy the live football. So it was kind of the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
And then a little bit after, my dad started doing quite a lot of research. He spoke to some historians at Manchester City and different things. And he found out that, because my great-granddad was actually a reserve player, because at the time there were the likes of like Matt Busby and Frank Swift in that team. They were a really good team.
Yeah.
And they went abroad to Fiorentina, and because some of the players were on England duty, my great-granddad actually got a chance to play. And he scored a goal in this friendly match, Manchester City against Fiorentina, and the Italy World Cup squad that went on to win the World Cup in 1934 were watching on the touchlines.
And oh, wow.
It's just kind of evolved as a really amazing and mad story. And then a little bit, fast forward a little bit more, and we went to Florence because he wanted to see the stadium. And we just made so many friends and fell in love with the atmosphere. And that's where my real love and passion of the league comes from, really. Watching on TV, but then actually going to watch a match is just like one of the best experiences ever. And that's why we've continued to keep going. And you know, I've made a career out of it as well.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Cool. It is a real love story then from start to finish.
Yeah.
So you've answered my next question, which is your favourite club, Fiorentina. Fantastic. Yeah. Particularly back when you're talking about in the 90s, that's when I got into it as well. And you know, like you said, there were some fantastic players there, always a fantastic atmosphere in the ground. And this sounds really silly, but I really like Fiorentina's kit. It's a bit yeah. unusual, isn't it? So
yeah,
that's something that grabbed me instantly.
People always ask me, you know, do you like Fiorentina because of the purple kits? And I'm like, well, no, I've got a bit of a longer story, but I do like the kits as well.
Yeah, it is a fantastic kit. It is a wonderful kit. So we're talking about your favourite club, Fiorentina. Do you have, you know, obviously you work within the Serie A world now. You're very well known for what you do. You know, I put a couple of tweets out saying that this podcast was starting, and I received two or three messages saying, get in touch with Chloe Beresford, you've got to do it. So obviously, you know, your work goes down brilliantly and stuff. And in all your years of covering Serie A, is there a particular player that stands out to you? Is it, you know, if someone says to you, who's your favourite Serie A player of all time, who instantly comes to mind?
Obviously, I'd have to say Battistuta. I mean, I quite often still even now just watch videos of him because I just love to watch him play. You know, the power in his shooting and the range of goals that he scored. And, you know, as well, his loyalty, because I know that, you know, Manchester United, Real Madrid and all, you know, all those kind of teams at the time were interested in him, and the fact that he stayed was just amazing. And I think no one begrudged him when he eventually went to Roma to win the Scudetto with them.
Yeah.
He's a player, you know, with the likes of Totti and Paolo Maldini are all the same, where they've become synonymous with one club. And, you know, although he did move on eventually, he is obviously best known for his days at Fiorentina. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. What about in terms of overall memory of Serie A? You mentioned that you went and saw a game out in Florence. But what would you say is your greatest memory of the league as a whole, though?
I've travelled widely now across Italy. And, you know, all the stadiums have got their own unique atmosphere. And it's just such a pleasure to go and see these things that, you know, when I was younger, I could never have even imagined that I would be doing this. So it is a real privilege to travel. But I have to say, my best experience was Fiorentina against Juventus a couple of seasons ago. And those who follow the league will know that there's a big rivalry between those two teams.
Yeah.
So it was a highly charged atmosphere as it was. Fiorentina, of course, are a massive underdog to Juve. And, you know, I went sort of thinking, well, it'll be a great atmosphere, Fiorentina will probably lose, but, you know, hey ho. But actually, they won 2-1. And there was a great big choreography for a Fiorentina legend in the 80s, Giancarlo Antonioni, who's still involved with the club. that was just stunning, and everything about the night was just magical from start to finish. The fact that they won, there were celebrations under the stand after the game for just ages and ages, just singing and celebrating. It was spilled out into the streets, it was in the bars, there were flares, people were on tables. It was absolute madness, but it was just a brilliant night all around, really.
Fantastic experience. It sounds amazing. In terms of Serie A now, you know, a lot of people talk about it as being previously the best league in Europe, now mm-hmm. maybe not so much. I'm still a huge fan of it. I always have been. But how would you say it ranks in comparison to, say, the Premier League and La Liga now? Because, you know, we know that there's probably less money in Italy now in comparison to sort of what goes around in the Premier League and, of course, what Real Madrid and Barcelona can spend in La Liga. But how does it rank in terms of Europe's top leagues for you? And what does Serie A need to do to get back to the top?
I think a lot of it comes down to personal choice. I think, you know, people always have a favourite league, and they could argue for a million years that theirs was the best. I can't hide the fact that I love Serie A. I'm probably biased towards it because it's captured my imagination completely. I think, obviously, like you say, there's probably more money and a bit more glamour in the Premier League and La Liga. And also, I think the fact that Juve have won the title for the past 7 years probably puts people off a little bit. Say, you know, it's always the same winner and it's not that exciting. But if you look past that, you see that the rest of the league is really competitive. That Juve are now at a level where they can bring in superstar players like Cristiano Ronaldo. And I think that is definitely a good thing for the league in terms of bringing the spotlight back. But, you know, the fact that so many of Serie A's players are mentioned in the transfer window linked with Moved Away, I think, you know, there are the star players there, plus there's all the colour and the passion of the supporters. You know, to me, it's an all-round exciting league. And I watched a little bit of the Sunderland documentary on Netflix recently.
Yep.
And I noticed the way that the tactics were being explained and the way the club was being run behind the scenes seems so primitive in comparison to the way that Serie A teams are running that way. Mm-hmm. You know, all 20 managers at the moment are all Italian. They all come from a school of football called Coverciano, which is near Fiorentina Stadium, actually. And they have to write a thesis on a particular subject in football, really detailed, and you know, they come from this school of where they learn tactics inside out. And you know, if you do watch other leagues, having watched Serie A regularly, you can see where apart from the managers, say like Pep Guardiola or Jurgen Klopp, the tactics are quite naive in compared to Italian ones. So I think it's strong in that way. It's just in terms of marketing itself, and in terms of the fact that they had so many stars in the 90s, the stadiums are outdated. You know, a lot needs to change internally within the Italian FA to bring it up to the level that it should be. But, you know, for somebody who doesn't watch Serie A regularly, I would say give it a chance, give it a go, because it is so exciting. There are flaws there. You know, we saw with the Koulibaly incident, which was just awful, that there is still a problem with racism. But there are so many good points. It's, you know, just watch it and give it a chance, I would say.
Yeah, I totally agree. And like you said, you know, the tactics are more sophisticated, and there's so much history there. There's so many great rivalries. I mean, you've spoken about the Fiorentina-Juventus rivalry. A casual Serie A fan probably wouldn't know that. And that's the thing. And I found out maybe a few years ago that Inter and Atalanta have a real hatred for each other. So there's so many rivalries, so much history in that league.
Lots of stories and interesting things to find out about.
That's it. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Chloe, thank you so much. I know you're so busy, so I really do appreciate you taking the time to come on. And hopefully we can speak again during the season and we can talk about some actual Serie A action.
Yeah, that would be brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
That was the wonderful Chloe Beresford. You can check her work out by following her on Twitter. She writes some fantastic articles with great regularity, and you know, she's brilliant. She's brilliant. A fountain of Serie A knowledge and someone that you'll definitely want to follow if you're interested in this competition. Now, next up, I spoke to Matt Santangelo, another Italian football writer.
Matthew Santangelo, welcome to Simply Serie A. How are you doing, my friend?
Doing pretty well. Thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure, and it's great to talk to you again. We spoke a little while back on the Chronicles of Aguna, when we were talking about your friend Lucas Torreira. I know he's one of your favorite players. How are you? How have you been?
Good. You know, it's obviously you know, like as you just mentioned, you know, doing the previous discussion of Lucas Torreira. So it's going to be nice to get back into the team I love so much, and you know, the league I love so much, and that's of course being AC Milan and Serie A. So I'm definitely excited for this.
Brilliant stuff. Brilliant. Right, let's get cracking. So how did you initially fall in love with Serie A? I know for me, I always talk about it being televised in the UK back in the 90s, and that's how I fell in love with it. But from your own point of view, I know you're based in the States, so how did you fall in love with Serie A?
Well, I mean, it's going to sound silly, but I think, you know, for many people in the United States or outside of Italy, outside of Europe in general, I think a lot of people do tend to find different ways to get, you know, gravitate towards a specific league, whether it be a player, whether it be a something they see on TV, and then they kind of do a little bit more digging about that player or that team. And then before you know it, they can kind of immerse themselves, and before you know it, they're a fan of the team, right? So for me, my family really wasn't from, you know, like a huge, like, football-loving family. You know, obviously, as an American, we have tons of other sports that are very popular.
Yep.
Basketball, baseball, football, American football, which I played at a young age, but I was one of those late bloomers to football, European football, rather. You know, got kind of caught up into it around, I think, 2002, around that 2002 World Cup. And then, of course, obviously, that was a golden era for Milan, right? So for me, that's kind of where it started to blossom. I started to pick it up by myself. I started to just, you know, again, play the FIFA video games, do some reading, you know, do some, you know, just web browsing, see what I can find. And lo and behold, you know, I started finding a Milan, right? That was a great era for Milan. And as a fan, of course, something I'm very, you know, I always kind of find myself, you know, reminiscing about. So that's kind of how, in a nutshell, how I got into football. I know I'm sure Adam and I'm sure Chloe have different stories than mine, but I think, you know, what makes the game so special is that everyone falls in love in a different way. Everyone, you know, finds the sport and you know, gravitates towards it in a different way and in a different manner. And that's what I think is so special about the game, besides everything that's on the pitch and, you know, it being so beautiful.
Absolutely. And you've spoken about your love for Milan as a team. Sort of, is it purely down to the success they were having at the time, or is there something more that attracted you to that fantastic club?
Well, you know, I'm a Sicilian and Polish, so you know, obviously Italian football, you know, most people, there's a lot of people, right? You ask a German person, right? We know that there's a good chance that they're going to be a fan of someone in the Bundesliga. You know, maybe they like some other teams in England, or maybe they, you know, Italy, but more or less, you know, they'll probably have their allegiance and their alliance towards a team that's in their country, right? So for me, I was, you know, being, I have Italian roots, Italian ancestry, I looked at it, I was like, okay, well, you know, like I started looking at the teams at the time and really some of the players. Again, it wasn't so much that I was, you know, handed down a team. I know there's a lot of people in generation to generation that's saying their grandfather was a Milan fan, their, you know, their mother was a Milan fan, and then it kind of just kind of fell on their lap. For me, I kind of just did a lot of it looking. For whatever reason, I just stumbled upon Milan, you know, the colors, the players they had at the time. Obviously, Maldini being a huge influence and a huge reason for why I'm a Milan fan, among many others, of course, that I'm going to talk about. But yeah, I don't know. It was just something about Italian football, the aura around it, the environment, the passion around that game at that time. You know, unfortunately for me, I only have videos and articles to kind of look back towards, like, the core of the 90 era, which was so famed. It was so, you know, popular, and it still is to this day. But yeah, I think that's, you know, for more or less, it was with Milan, it was just like my Italian ancestry, you know, me looking to get into the game and saying, okay, well, I know, you know, and no offense to anybody who's a Major League Soccer fan, but this brand didn't quite do it for me. It didn't quite get me into the sport. I've kind of established and learned to love and enjoy Major League Soccer after the fact. And I think that's, you know, a similar case for many people that I know. You know, they love the European game, but they know that Major League Soccer is growing, so they kind of lean back towards that. So again, it was the colors, it was the players they had on the pitch, it was, you know, just everything about Italian football at that time. And you know, with Milan, obviously all the names they had, the success they had, you know, their domination in European tournaments, it was easy for me to fall in love with them.
Yeah, totally agree. And, you know, Milan are a team who at the moment aren't quite fulfilling their potential. You know, mm-hmm. when I think back to that 90s era that we were talking about, they were one of the big sides, you know, and Adam's already spoken about how for Italian football to get back to the very top where it needs to be, the two Milan clubs need to get their acts together, basically, and put in a real title challenge. What would you say has held Milan back in recent years? Because, you know, we can talk about lack of investment. We can talk about bad. For me, it's more about bad recruitment when it comes to Milan, as opposed to not spending enough money.
Yeah, I think you're spot on there. You know, you ask most people, I mean, yeah, it's easy to look at the players, right? Oh, you didn't buy, you know, champion players. You didn't buy, you know, winning, you know, top flight players, right? And I think it goes more than that, because we've seen clubs do more with less than Milan, right? You know, teams like Atalanta, teams like Lazio, who don't have that same pedigree or that same history of being a team that attracts the best of the best. And again, no disrespect to those clubs, but when you think Italian football, you think Juve, you think Milan, you think Inter. I think those are the first three teams that come to mind, and I'm sure you would agree, and many others who really aren't so much maybe invested in Serie A, but like the league, enjoy the league, and from the outside know who the kind of the cream of the crop, the big teams are over, you know, Serie A's long history. So I think for me, as a Milan fan, when I was looking at this entire, they called the banter era, if you will, that's kind of the big name going around on Twitter for the past several years. It's been a bunch of different things, you know, obviously at the top with Berlusconi, you know, the investment wasn't there. So by default, you're not going to be able to get, you know, the big time players that maybe Juve are getting or some of the big teams around Europe are able to attract. So therefore, you got to get a little bit creative, again, along with option type deals and things like that, and, you know, maybe free transfers, and just try to find value in any way you can. But I think it's also been the appointment of managers. And I think it's been a revolving door really since Allegri left, and he was only there for a couple of seasons. It's not like he was there for, you know, 7, 8, 9 years, like we see with some other managers across Europe. So I think for me, it's a combination of different things. But I think if you really want to boil it down to, you know, one specific thing as being that big key reason why Milan aren't where they're supposed to be, or why they aren't at the pinnacle, should I say, of Serie A, is I think it's, again, recruitment from the manager, from, you know, the players, and, you know, really ultimately having that management group up top to kind of make all those decisions, right? It's a hierarchy. It's a trickle-down effect. If you don't have the right brain trust, the right guys in place to make the decisions, do you trust them to hire the right manager? Do you trust that manager in return to get the flexibility and the financial wherewithal to be able to go and say, hey, I need this player to in order to achieve what I need to achieve? So recruitment would be a good way to put it as one of the biggest reasons why Milan aren't where they're supposed to be.
Absolutely. And I know they've just obviously hired Ivan Gazidis, who was at my club mm-hmm. here in the UK, Arsenal. I'm not his biggest fan, so I'm not going to get into that now. But I'm not convinced that was a wise appointment on Milan's part. In terms of your favorite players from Serie A, you know, I keep referring back to the 90s, but mm-hmm. that for me was the real golden age in Serie A. But in the time that you've been watching the league and that you've been covering the league, is there any standout player that comes to mind? You know, if I was to ask you who's your favorite all-time Serie A player that you've obviously watched, who would you sort of lean to first?
If I had to say, I'm a huge, huge, huge Kaká fan, you know, and for many different reasons. I think there's a lot of people that would say, you know, well, you're Italian, you like Milan, like how is it not Maldini? How is it not Baresi? How is it not, you know, a couple other players? And I think for that reason, I didn't fall in love in the game at that time. I wasn't around, you know, because in Maldini's heyday, he had such a long career, and I saw quite a bit of him towards the tail end of his career. But I was kind of getting right into Serie A, right into Milan, right when Kaká arrived and when he kind of burst onto the scene. He was the Ballon d'Or winner, had that great goal against Manchester United, and of course, the, you know, the two Champions League titles. So, you know, for me, it's Kaká's an easy choice, someone easy to fall in love with, to be attracted to. Obviously, you know, for other reasons, aside from the fact that he's a fantastic footballer, and unfortunately, injuries at the end of his career kind of derailed what could have been a more, even more illustrious playing career in terms of stats and in terms of maybe accolades. I'm a Catholic, so I kind of relate in him with that way. You know, the guy, there's a lot of Brazilians, a lot of players, a lot of, you know, that wear their heart on their sleeves. They show their emotions, and, you know, they're not afraid to, you know, show their religious beliefs on the pitch. We see it with the other different religions, not just Christianity, anything like that. We see it with Salah, with, we see it all across the world. And I think that's such a great thing about the game, is that it's so universal, it's so open, and it just, everyone has their own way of expressing themselves and kind of, you know, showing that emotion in the moment, which is, you know, I find it, you know, a great, you know, piece of what is a bigger game. So for me, Kaká, you know, again, aside from everything he accomplished with Milan, again, which is quite a bit. And then prior to this year, of course, when Luka Modric won the Ballon d'Or, being the last guy besides Ronaldo and Messi to win it, I mean, it's, you know, what more else is there to say? Kaká's an all-time great for me, and someone that, you know, I definitely hold in high regard. And I'm hoping that he does return to the club in some capacity soon.
Yep, absolutely. And just before I let you go, Matthew, final question. I mean, it's a question that I've put to all the other guys, and we've had some really interesting answers so far. I want to get your take on it. What do you think that needs to what do you think needs to happen for Serie A to return to the pinnacle of European football, to be regarded as it once was, as the best league in Europe? What needs to happen? What steps need to be taken?
I think you touched on it a little bit earlier, right? And you're referring to what Adam said about, you know, the Milan teams need to kind of, you know, step their game up and make serious title challenges, and not only serious title challenges, but be a factor in the Champions League, right? You know, obviously you look at you look at those three teams, Italy's top three teams in terms of the history, in terms of success, right? Those are the three best teams and the teams that I consider to be the three teams that carry Serie A, you know, when it's all said and done, right? Whatever people want to look at Serie A as being, and you want to understand what the health of Serie A is. I think if you look at those three teams, if they're all able to be competing and really relevant, and they're always going to be relevant in some way, shape, or form, but in terms of relevant in terms of, again, competing for top honors, those three teams need to be at the top and doing well. I think, again, if you look at some of the other teams, it's great to have, you know, the Atalantas, the Sassuolos, because you do need those stories. Obviously, every league needs those stories, right? We've seen it with your Premier League, with the Leicesters, you know, all these other teams that come out of nowhere to kind of give you those headlines, give you those that romanticism about the game and why we actually play the game on the pitch versus on paper. But I think, again, if you really look at it, if Milan and Inter are able to kind of follow suit with Juve, not saying go on a 7-8 year run where they win the league, but, you know, start to be a title contender, start to get back to the Champions League, you know, maybe make deep runs in return, also get the top players, which we're seeing Inter do right now with Lautaro Martinez, Kenta Balde, Raja Nainggolan, you know, obviously they're reportedly getting Diego Godin in the summer. If Milan are able to get back to a point in a position of power where they can attract those big name players, you throw them three giants with the Napolis, the Romas, and the Lazios. Now you're talking about a really 6 to 7, 8 team league that has a lot of depth and that can really ultimately be one of the top, you know, top leagues in Europe that I do think it is at the moment. But I think there's so much more growth and so much more potential for Serie A at this moment in time. So I'm hoping that, again, Milan and Inter, just, you know, throw my bias aside from Milan, because obviously I'm not too fond of Inter, but they do need to be there as well. And if they are there, it's only going to make Serie A grow as a league, and it's only going to get more people like me years ago back into the league.
Yep, absolutely. Matthew, thank you so much for giving us your time today. And hopefully we can speak to you during the season at some point and get your take on all things Serie A.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on, and good luck to your Arsenal.
Thank you very much.
And last but not least, I spoke to the brilliant Adam Digby.
Welcome to Simply Serie A, Adam Digby. How are you, mate?
I'm good. How are you?
Not too bad, thank you. Not too bad. It's a little cold here in England at the time of recording, but we can't really complain. It is January, isn't it? What did we expect? Adam, thank you so much for coming on. It's a real pleasure to have you here. Just want to talk to you about Serie A and how you got into it, basically, as you know, part of the show's launch. We want to talk to some of the people that hopefully can contribute during the season and some of the well-respected Italian football journalists, of which you are certainly one. So, Adam, how did you initially fall in love with Serie A?
Because I've got Italian connections in my family, and we used to watch Italian football rather than English football. So I grew up around it, and I watched it the way that anyone else would be watching the English league. It was always on around the house every Sunday. And you just kind of fall in love with it from there, don't you? The same as you do with any football, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember those days, Sunday afternoons on Channel 4, wasn't it? And of course, the Saturday morning review show where they used to go for all the goals. I actually used to run around the house doing the Vincenzo Montella aeroplane celebration, if you remember that.
Yeah, definitely.
So in terms of like a favourite club, do you have a favourite club? Has it sort of been a neutral love for Italian football, or is there a club that pulls on your heartstrings?
No, it's always been Juve for me. It always has been. They were just coming to the end of a great cycle of success in the mid 80s when I started to watch Serie A with Trapattoni. They'd started to win the league regularly. They won all the European trophies, the UEFA Cup, the Cup Winners' Cup, and the European Cup at Heysel. And then just as I was starting to fall in love with Juve, Michel Platini decided to retire at 27, and Juve just went into sort of free fall from there in the late 80s. One of my earliest memories is watching them in a UEFA Cup playoff against Torino, because they finished level on points in the league, and it went to penalties, and Ian Rush scored a penalty that helped Juve qualify for the UEFA Cup at the time. And obviously then they lived the next decade in the shadow of the great AC Milan team that everybody's so in love with and that I detested with a passion, because they stopped my team from winning anything.
That's understandable. That's fair enough. In terms of a favourite player, I know you've been watching Serie A for years and years and years. Is there, I don't know, this is a really difficult question, but is there a standout player for you? Someone that you know, when people ask you, who is your favourite Serie A player, it is the first person that comes to your mind?
The first person that comes to mind is Luca Vialli. And to be honest, it's not a difficult one. Yeah, obviously, yeah, I've watched a lot of great players in Serie A, a lot of great Juve players. But Vialli just had it all. And as a 12, 13, 14-year-old watching him play for Sampdoria, I just couldn't believe how good he was. He was very, for people who don't really remember him, he was a very similar to Battistuta in the way that he scored just thundering volleys, great headers. And ridiculous overhead kicks seemingly every weekend. And then he signed for Juve from Sampdoria, and that was it. And I was finished completely. He became the captain. He helped Juve win the Champions League. He was just so good. And I really don't think that when he came to England, anyone really got to see just how good he was. He was coming to the end of his career. He was more interested in becoming the manager, which obviously then he did. England really did miss out on the very best of Vialli, which is a shame, because I think his style would have fit perfectly in the English league.
Yep, totally agree. In terms of your fondest memory, I'm sure there's a few, but sort of, is there a particular game that stands out in your mind as being your favourite?
I think probably that my favourite memory of watching Juve is undoubtedly that winning the Champions League in 96. They've not won it since, which kind of helps narrow the field. But I think probably aside from that, because it was a pretty dour game that ended up going to penalties, I think one of my fondest memories now would probably be the first game at the new stadium when Juve, after two seasons of being pretty rubbish in 2011, Antonio Conte had just arrived, so had Andrea Pirlo, and they took on Parma, who'd beaten them in the couple of seasons before that, pretty embarrassingly on two occasions. And they just demolished Parma. They won 4-1. Parma's goal was a very late on penalty. And the opening goal was one of those typical Pirlo passes, clean over the top. Stefan Ligsteiner clean through on goal, and he just smashed it in the bottom corner. And Juve never looked back from there. Went the whole season undefeated, and the success that they've enjoyed since moving to that stadium is really special. It is kind of watered down by the fact that that stadium's kind of everything that Italian football isn't. It's very modern, very clean, and lacks a lot of the passion that really is the heart of Serie A, isn't it? The flares and the banners. It's a lot more diluted than that. But that game, that game was really special as a and I think that has to be up there. But to be honest, I would honestly have to go back to that Champions League win as the biggest memory because it was just everything that I wanted Juve to achieve. And after watching, as I said before, after years of watching that AC Milan team do it seemingly every season, it was great that my team finally got a goal as well.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't get much bigger, does it, than the Champions League? So that's completely understandable. You mentioned Stefan Lichtsteiner there, a player who's now playing in the Premier League with my team, Arsenal. And, you know, he's been getting a lot of criticism of late. People saying that he's not good enough for this league and stuff like that. People need to remember, though, what a good player Stefan Lichtsteiner was. Would you agree? He's obviously a little bit over the hill now, but he has been a great servant to Juventus over the years, hasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. A bit like Vialli, I guess. He came a little bit too late to the Premier League because otherwise his style would have suited it perfectly. I mean, if you go back and watch the two Champions League games against Celtic, I think it was 2012-13, he almost single-handedly knocked Celtic out by himself. And he was wrestling players around when the referee wasn't looking. And typical Premier League hard man fullback, you know, but with real quality as well. As I said, he scored the first official goal at the new Juventus Stadium. His crossing was superb. He helped Juve eliminate Tottenham from the Champions League.
Yeah, I remember that fondly.
Yeah, and he really did have limitless energy and top quality as well, and absolutely the mindset of a top player. Just in the way that he approached the game. In the way that he viewed the game. I interviewed him about 4 years ago.
Oh wow!
And he was telling me, he said to me, if he's playing against Roma and Jovino is coming down the wing, playing in Turin, and he goes flying into Jovino and clears him out when the score's 0-0, what happens? And I just looked at him and I'm like, you get booked? And he goes, no. He goes, First of all, I jump up and I scream at the first guy I see in the front row of fans, and he starts shouting back at me, and then all the fans around him start shouting. I turn around, I scream at Chiellini. Chiellini turns around and shouts at somebody else. Then Buffon is shouting. He goes, and all of a sudden, the temperature at Juventus Stadium's gone up by 10 degrees, and Roma just have no chance, all because I cleaned out Jovino. And I like to just think that, and to... Because I, the question I asked him was about people viewing him as a dirty player. Yeah. And he was like, no, I do it on purpose. And I was just blown away that A, that he would confess that, and B, that he thought about the game in that way, that a lot of his fouls were done on purpose to inspire the crowd, his teammates, to just get a reaction. And then when you watch him after that, it kind of makes sense. And it is though a shame, definitely, that he's come to Arsenal when he's struggling a little bit. I think in his last season at Juve, he was used a lot less. Obviously, he had a season where he had a problem with his heart. He had a season where Dani Alves was there. So he played a lot less in his final few seasons. Because before that, as I say, he really was a top player, and he was an incredible athlete too. And he really did have it all. And I think at his best, if he would have come to the Premier League, we'd be having a very different conversation about Stefan Lichtsteiner, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't doubt that for a second. A lot of people that I speak to day in, day out, obviously based here in the UK, there's a lot of people that, you know, were in love with Serie A back in the sort of 90s, people of sort of my age group who grew up in that period, they loved it, they adored it, they watched it every week. And then, of course, you know, I wouldn't say it's gone down because I still love it. And if I didn't, I wouldn't be doing a show about it. But I absolutely adore Serie A. But it's got a bit of a worse reputation nowadays, hasn't it, here in the UK? For me, you know, the signing of Cristiano Ronaldo is huge because what that's done is it's put the spotlight back on Serie A in many ways for those sort of casual fans. How would you say Serie A ranks in comparison to Europe's other top leagues, and what do they need to do to get to that sort of elite, where they're regarded as the elite league like they once were?
I think that's difficult because I think Serie A had a huge benefit, especially in the UK in the early 90s, as you say, because in 92 it came on Channel 4 free, obviously, at the same time that the Premier League went to Sky. And then you watch how the Premier League unfolded over the next few years, and Manchester United just kept winning everything. And you look at Serie A and you had Sampdoria just won the league when it first came on TV, and then Milan started to win it, and then Juve were there, and Inter were always knocking on the door. But you had the likes of Fiorentina and Parma and Roma and Lazio, who all won European trophies in the 90s as well, and all really staked claims as being among the European elite. And they all had good results against English teams, and obviously, with winning the Champions League so much, Manchester United players and Alex Ferguson spoke at length about how they modelled themselves on Juve because Juve were the best team in Europe at that time because they got to three finals in a row. And I think, unfortunately, then the reverse happened in that Serie A went away from English television and at the same time suffered with Calciopoli and its own problems. And then when it came back with BT, AC Milan and Inter Milan were rubbish, and those were two of the three biggest teams that everybody knew. And all of a sudden, it's Roma, excuse me, it's Roma and it's Lazio and it's Napoli, and people remember Napoli because of Maradona, but there's no real attachment to them.
Yeah,
and all the teams that people are used to, Parma were bankrupt and in the fourth division, Fiorentina were on the fringe of the Europa League. And all those familiar faces, Batistuta, Baresi, Marco van Basten, have all gone. And it's kind of starting from scratch, isn't it?
Yeah.
In a league that doesn't really matter because they're not winning the Champions League. They're not doing anything even in the Europa League. Juve are winning all the time. It's boring. So I think all those circumstances came together to kind of make people kind of not care. And that's understandable. And, you know, at the same time, TV really took off, the internet, Twitter. You can watch any game from anywhere in the world that you want. Do you really want to watch Lazio against Napoli as a second against fourth in Serie A? Then you have all the problems with racism that clearly the league doesn't get out of its own way. They end up suspending Koulibaly this week for as long as they've suspended Inter's fans who racially abused him.
It's
unbelievable, but it's just that typical Italian mindset of, one of the deputy prime minister came out and said that Milan fans booed Leonardo Bonucci at San Siro this season. Is that racism? It's like, no, obviously it isn't. The two are just not comparable in any way. But there's still this ancient mindset and attitude that it's just a bit of a laugh and it's okay. It's kind of like where English football was in the 70s. And it all just adds up to make people not want to pay any attention. But if you actually take the time to watch the matches, and not even the biggest clubs, if you watch even the smaller teams, you look at the passion of a club like Fiorentina or the Genoa and Sampdoria, you look at the way that their fans get behind the teams, the stadiums, and even the matches themselves. I mean, you watch, okay, if you watch the Man City Liverpool game earlier this week is fantastic, but a lot of the Premier League stuff is still, having watched Serie A all my life, I watched a lot of the Premier League games, and it's just so tactically naive, you know. It's like a children's game still, but you watch Serie A, and it's easy to say it's like chess, but you can see the thought that's gone into the way that the teams approach the game. You can see managers getting found out so easily because they're just not up to scratch. You can see the sheer attention to detail that goes into these things. And then you see those same managers come to the Premier League, and you look at what Antonio Conte did when he first came. Yep. You look at what Maurizio Sarri is doing. You look at the fact that Claudio Ranieri can win the league with Leicester City. And it really does just show that these managers are just a cut above everything else. And know that the players are not, it's not like watching Batistuta and Van Basten and Viale, but you look at these managers and they're streets ahead of the middle of the road. Obviously, you have to put Klopp and Guardiola and Pochettino even on a different level. But you look at what somebody like Eusebio Di Francesco can do. You look at what Max Allegri can do, where he can change formation against Tottenham and bring on Asamoah and Lichtsteiner in 2017, 2018 even, and win a match of football against somebody like Pochettino.
Yeah,
that's incredible acumen to see that would make a difference, and then for those two players to defeat a team with the likes of Harry Kane and Dele Alli and Christian Eriksen, who we get told every week are just so amazing, and they get found out by Stefan Lichtsteiner and Kwadwo Asamoah. You know, it doesn't make sense, but if you watch Serie A, it does, and it's really difficult because the whole argument about which league is better, I think now is kind of irrelevant because we can watch them all, and it really does boil down to personal preference. And for me, if you want to watch a game of 22 people running up and down without really any idea, watch the Premier League. It's fantastic. It's great entertainment. But if you want to watch actual football, if you want to watch a well thought out, sophisticated game, a game for grown ups, then Serie A is the league for you. It really is like that. And that's not to be like a hipster or snobbish or elitist. If you watch Burnley against West Brom, then you know exactly what you're going to get. But if you watch Sampdoria against Sassuolo, then it's going to be a completely different game. And for me, it's just better. And slowly, thanks to, like you said, the arrival of Cristiano Ronaldo, the kind of resurgence we're seeing in Milan, which I think is crucial for Serie A to get back to being considered relevant. Yep. That Inter and AC Milan are both right there fighting. I think if you see that, if you look at what Roma are doing, if you look at what Fiorentina have done, if you look at Sampdoria, the way that they've developed over the last few years, I think you can see the seeds are there for something special with Serie A. And yeah, it's going to take time because the Premier League and Serie A and even Bayern Munich and teams like that, Borussia Dortmund, they've already kind of got their place in the hearts and minds of people who are watching, but it really is, it's right there, and you can see it every week when you watch Serie A, and it slowly is returning to form. And I think it's going to take a Champions League win by Juve and maybe even a title win for Milan or Inter before people are ready to admit it in a wider forum. But for me, the league is fantastic, and if you're not watching it, you're missing out. And it's not to say, you should stop watching the Premier League, it's rubbish. It's just, it's different. Just give it a try. You might like it.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I always say to people, when people ask me this question, my answer is normally something along the lines of, it's not as good as your answer, but it's normally something along the lines of, well, the Premier League has been marketed better. They've got a better PR team behind them. And, you know, they've made a point of going and marketing themselves in Asia, in the Far East. And that's why they've got the world following they have. The football is not any better, in my opinion. And, you know, like you said, who wants to watch Burnley versus West Brom? But no disrespect to those two clubs, but you'd much rather watch the likes of Genoa, Sampdoria. I certainly would anyway. So yeah, take all those points on board. Brilliant. Adam, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day. I know you're really busy, and hopefully we can talk to you during the season at some point.
Yeah, definitely. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, brings us to the end of our launch episode. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Simply Serie A. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes. Follow us on SoundCloud if that's where you're listening from. And, of course, subscribe on YouTube.
we do have a YouTube channel. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back very soon with our first weekly review show. It's just around the corner, so stay tuned, guys. All the best.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.